Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Janavala Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Randana Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Randana Yamuna Tira Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Radha Shama Sundara Radha Shama Sundara Shri Radhe Jaya Krishna Balaram Jaya Krishna Balaram Jaya Krishna Balaram Jaya Krishna Balaram Jaya Gora Nitai Jaya Gora Nitai Jaya Gora Nitai Jaya Gora Nitai Jai Gauranita. Hari Bori, Hari 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 Bo. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, we'll recite together. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devam sarasvatim vyasam tato jaya mudiraye shrimvantam swakata krishna punya shravana kirtana hridantasto hyabhadrani vidunoti suritsatam nashta praeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya Bhagavati Uttamashloke Bhaktir Vavati Naishtiki. So before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Sarasvati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. And that's from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.4. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, super soul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.17, and by regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So, dear devotees, today we're going to be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 19, verses 25 and 26. For 25, we're going to chant the Sanskrit together, and then we'll read together the English translation, and then I'll read the short purport on my own. And then for the second verse, that's when we'll do a call and response. Okay, so Srimad Bhagavatam 3:19:25. Tam musti birvi nignantam braja sharer adokshaya karena karna mulehan yata tvashtra marupati. I caught you guys by surprise, so let's do that again together. So, Tam musti birvi nignantam braja sarya radokshayaha karena karne mulehan yata tvashtram marutpati. And then we'll say the translation together. The demon now began to strike the Lord with his hard fists, but Lord Adokshaya slapped him in the root of the ear, even as Indra, the Lord of the Maruts, hit the demon Vritta. And purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. So the Lord is explained here to be Adokshaya, beyond the reach of all material calculation. Akshaya means the measurement of our senses, and Adokshaya means that which is beyond the measurement of our senses. So next we have Canto 3, Chapter 19, Verse 26. And this we'll do line by line. I have to hum the rhythm so I get it. Sarahato Vishwajita Yajnaya. Sarahato Vishwajita Yajnaya. Pari Brahman Katraudasta Lochana. Pari Brahman Katraudasta Lochana. Vishitarna Bahu Angri Shiro Ruho Patad. Sorry. Let's try that again. Vishina bahu angri shiro ruho patad. Yata, yata nagendro lulito nabasvata. Yata nagendro lulito nabasvata. Sahata Vishva Jita Vyachnaya. Pari Brahmad Katra Udasta Lochana. Vishinna Bahu Angrishiro Ruho Patad. Yata nagendro lulito navasvata. Okay, I think we got it now. So please chant. Who would like to start?
Sato Vishvajita Yavajnaya Pari Brahmad Gatra Udasta Lochana Vishinna Bahu Angri Shiro Ruho Patat Yata Nagendro Lulito Navasvata. Shahata Doishna Jita Hivyana Naja Pari Brahmad Katra Udasta Lochana Vishinna Bahu Angri Shiro Ruho Patar Yata Nagendro Lulito Navasvata Sahat Vishvajna Vajitavya Vashnaya Pari Brahmad Katra Udasta Lochana Vishinna Bhavam Jirito Huvopata Yata Nagendro Lulito Navasvata.
Vaishnavis?
Saha Vishvajita Yavajnaya Saha Vishvajita Hari Brahmad Katra Udasta Luchana Vishinya Bhavangri Jirobu Opata Vishama Gendro Lulito Vagosvata Sahaja Vishna Fayata Vatasvata Vishinna Bahu Angri Shiro Ruho Pata Yata Nagendro Lulito Navasvata. Yaha Vishwam Vyati Vyati Vaishma Pari Brahmad Katra Udasta Lochana Vishinna Bahu Angri Shiro Ruho Patat
Okay, Hare Krishna. Thank you for all the brave souls who did that. This was not easy. So synonyms: sa, he, ahataha, having been struck, vishvajita, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he, though, avajnaya, indifferently. Pari Brahmat, wheeling. Gatra, body. Udasta, bulged out. Lochana, eyes. Vishirna, broken. Bahu, arms. Angri, legs. Shira Ruha, hair. Apatat, fell down. Yata, like. Naga Indra, a gigantic tree. Lulita, uprooted. Nabasvata, by the wind. Translation again by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Can never pray enough to him, right? So those struck indifferently by the Lord, the conqueror of all, the demon's body began to wheel. His eyeballs bulged out of their sockets. His arms and legs broken and the hair in his head scattered. He fell down dead like a gigantic tree uprooted by the wind. Please repeat. Those struck indifferently by the Lord, the conqueror of all, the demon's body began to wheel. His eyeballs bulged out of their sockets. His arms and legs broken. And the hair on his head scattered. He fell down dead. Like a gigantic tree uprooted by the wind. So purport, it does not take even a moment for the Lord to kill any powerful demon, including here on Yaksha. The Lord could have killed him long before, but he allowed the demon to display the full extent of his magical feats. One may know that by magical feats, by scientific advancement of knowledge, or by material power, one cannot become the equal of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His one single is sufficient to destroy all our attempts. His inconceivable power, as displayed here, is so strong that the demon, despite all his demoniac maneuvers, was killed by the Lord when the Lord desired, simply by one slap. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishta Sabitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapatantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nichananda Shri Advaita Gadarha Shivasari Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. Dear devotees, I humbly ask for your blessings that I may speak in this class in a way that glorifies God and inspires myself and others to serve Guru and Radha and Krishna. So today, the main points that I want to discuss are two. Qualities that turn us away from Krishna and qualities that turn us towards Krishna. So why am I speaking on these topics? Well, in today's verses, we have the continuing battle between the Lord and Hiranyaksha, this powerful demoniac personality. And this is a wonderful pastime about the Lord mercifully liberating a soul stuck in darkness and ignorance. So that soul had turned away from Krishna in that current life. We know his background, but in that current life. And this is a pastime that can inspire us with the Lord's power and mercy. However, I would like to talk about how this pastime can inspire us to look at ourselves and ask, are there ways that I'm turning away from Krishna? And I'm talking about subtle ways, like it could be our thoughts, our words. And ultimately, I'm going to talk about some qualities that help us turn towards Krishna and really grow our relationship towards our dearmost Lord. So there are so many qualities that can turn us away from Krishna, right? There's a whole chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, demoniac qualities. But what we think of as materialistic or demoniac is just, in general, things that are not helpful in growing towards the Lord. So for the sake of time, I'm just going to speak on three. Lust, anger, and greed. And I also just want to clarify that I'm going to be using the term materialistic from now on instead of demoniac. And there's two reasons. So one is, personally, I myself find it difficult to relate if thinking of myself as a demon. That's just a personal thing. And it's really hard for me to think of myself in a compassionate way or in a hopeful way in that way. The second is that Srila Prabhupada himself used the word materialistic more than demoniac. So, you know, Srila Prabhupada in his infinite wisdom, he probably understood that Western audiences, for the most part, understand the word demoniac because of our Christian backgrounds for most of us, as connected to the devil and is connected as to eternal judgment in hell, with no hope of redemption. And I even looked it up on Vedabase, and Srila Prabhupada uses the term daimonic in his writings and his talks 586 times, as opposed to materialistic, which he used 2,351 times. So almost four times as much. So thank you, as always, Srila Prabhupada. He always kind of adjusted things, radical personalism. So let's speak on these three key materialistic qualities, which are lust, anger, and greed. Now, I chose these to highlight for many reasons, but especially for Bhagavad Gita chapter 16, verse 21. So in that verse, Lord Krishna explains, there are three gates leading to this hell, lust, anger, and greed. And every sane man should give these up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. And then in the purport of this verse, as well as Bhagavad Gita chapter 16, verse 22, Srila Prabhupada beautifully explains, one tries to satisfy his lusts, and when he cannot, anger and greed arise. One should be very careful about these three enemies to human life, lust, anger, and greed. Because the more a person is freed from lust, anger, and greed, the more his existence becomes pure. Then he can follow the rules and regulations enjoined in the Vedic literature. And then by following the regulative principles of human life, one gradually raises himself to the platform of spiritual realization. So both Krishna and Srila Prabhupada are advising us to be careful with these emotions because they can really entangle us, they can bring us into hellish situations, and they can really turn us away from Krishna. And Krishna further clarifies this in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, verse 62, when he says, while contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them, and then from that attachment, lust develops, and then from lust, anger arises, so on and so on. So they really flow one into the other and not in healthy ways, and they're really a dangerous combination. I'm sure many of us either have read in the news or have personal examples of how we've seen that they lead people astray with like theft, murder, sexual crimes, like all kinds of things from these emotions. So you may say to yourself, well, I'm trying to serve the Lord. I see a lot of you come to Mangarati every day. We're coming to Srimad Bhagavatam class. So, you know, like I'm not committing any of these crimes. So I don't have any issues with lust, anger, greed. And I was thinking that for myself. But then I realized like we have to be careful about the subtle ways. Right, the subtle ways that lust, anger, and greed can influence us. And Srila Prabhupada kind of touched upon this in Bhagavad Gita chapter 3, verse 40, when he says, lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego and identify itself with matter, and thus with the mind and senses. So the spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses and mistakes this for true happiness. So again, Srila Prabhupada is kind of bringing us back to that materialistic mindset, which, you know, obviously we're here, we have material bodies, it's happening. So we become attached to the senses, and when we can't have whatever it is that we want, we become angry. And this is not just objects, but it could be like circumstances, it could be people. So these are all just things that lead us away from our true goal as spirit souls, which is just Krishna, serving Krishna. Now, a point of clarification on anger, because when I was speaking to some devotees and when I was giving this class, they made sure to point it out to me, that this is not righteous anger that we're talking about. This is not the anger of like defending the innocent or righting the wrongs. No, this anger is more of the anger of entitlement. This is an anger of thinking that we're entitled to these things, and thus when we don't get them, then we are angry. So this is an anger that comes more from that false ego. And it's an anger that's steeped in our forgetfulness of our true roles as servants of Krishna. So it's very different. It's an anger where we're forgetting humility and we're going to be kind of stuck in pride and envy. So it's very different from that. And that's why in Bhagavad Gita chapter 16, verse 18, Krishna clarifies this and says, bewildered by false ego, strength, pride, lust, and anger, the demons become envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in their own bodies and the bodies of others and blaspheme against real religion. So the reason why I picked this quote is because in the West, especially in the United States, we have to be very careful how these three gates to darkness and ignorance, so lust, anger, and greed, we have to be very careful with them because this is a very materialistic society. This is a society where what's valued is how much money we have, what possessions we have, what possessions other people have, and it's really about seeing spirit souls either in human bodies or in animal bodies as commodities, you know, to be consumed, right? So it's a society that really encourages this because that's what keeps the economy going and that's what keeps those in material power still in power, right? So we have to be very conscious of this because we have to be conscious before we're Krishna conscious, right? So I've heard Rukmini Prabhu say that many a time. So these emotions, they're leading us further away from Krishna, and it's a path where we're trying to fill in a God-sized hole in our hearts, right? And we may have heard that quote before, and the full quote is actually, there is a God-shaped vacuum in the heart of each man and woman, which cannot be satisfied by any created thing, but only by God. And this was actually said by a Christian thinker in the 17th century called Blaise Pascal. And I share this because it's good to kind of keep in mind that all the people or the things, all the circumstances that we may be lusty, that we may be greedy for, that we may get angry if we don't get them, they're never going to satisfy that hole in our hearts, right? Only Krishna can do that. And with that in mind, let's go into qualities that can actually kind of guide us towards Krishna and help us with that God-sized hole in our hearts. So those qualities are four: austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. Some of you may already start recognizing this, but why do I focus on these qualities? So in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, Verse 24, it says, in the age of Satya, truthfulness, your four legs were established by the four principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. But it appears that three of your legs are broken due to rampant irreligion in the form of pride, lust for women, and intoxication. So many of you may recognize this. This is from chapter 7 of Canto 1, entitled The Punishment and Reward of Kali. And this is Maharaj Parikshit speaking to the bull who is Dharma embodied. So Dharma is defined, and this is defined by, I got this from ISKCON Education Services, is defined as leading a righteous life in harmony with natural laws as defined in scripture, right? Or as Srila Prabhupada explained in a class he gave in 1970 in Surat, real dharma, actual dharma, is to abide by the words of the Supreme Lord. That is dharma. Just like Krishna says, mam ekam sharanam, from Bhagavad Gita 18:66, that is dharma, simply to surrender unto Krishna. Otherwise, it is not dharma. So these are four key principles or qualities that can help us live a righteous life in harmony with nature as Krishna has asked us to. And again, that's turning us towards him. So these four qualities, austerity, cleanliness, mercy, truthfulness, are going to be very familiar to those of us who have taken Diksha initiation, right? Or those who aspire for Diksha initiation, because these are the regulative principles, right? These are the regulative principles that Srila Prabhupada established in ISKCON. These are the vows we make. We vow no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and as well as chanting at least 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra every day. And I'll touch upon that a little bit later, but for now, let's just go over and remind ourselves again the connection between the four principles of Dharma and our four regulative principles. So the first one is truthfulness or honesty. Now, that's supported by promising not to gamble. And Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, verses 1 through 3, he says, satyam. This word means that one should not distort the truth for some personal interest. So just sit with that for a second, because that's really powerful. And we say, well, okay, Prabhupada, but how does gambling affect our ability to be truthful or honest? So I actually found a really interesting quote. It's from a book called All About Love, New Visions by Bell Hooks. And it was recommended by Danya Rico. She's a part of our community. She recently spoke at Urban Devi, which is an online women's sangha that I help co-host with Drew Kmini Walker Prabhu. And she spoke in September and she read from this book. And she shared because this book talks about seven key components to love, which are care, commitment, knowledge, responsibility, respect, trust, and honest and open communication. So when this author was speaking on trust and how lust and specifically gambling undermines it, she actually gave a very specific example, which I thought was really powerful. She says, most people are tempted by longings to endlessly consume or try to acquire wealth by any means. Many of these hardworking citizens lie and cheat other family members to sustain their habit. And while they will not be arrested or put in prison, their dysfunctional behavior undermines the trust and care in their families. So they have more in common with prisoners who risk everything in the hope of making easy money than they have with family members who want a loving connection to be more important than the lust for material success. So being truthful or honest is something that we want to strive for, not just because Srila Prabhupada, Krishna, our gurus, like so many in our community will ask this of us, but we can understand that it's a quality that if we embody it, then the people we care about, and even just people that we just met, somebody just walks into the temple, you just meet them at the supermarket, they'll understand that we value connections, right? Like actual personal connections, spiritual connections more than lust for material things. And that's always going to be something that turns us towards Krishna. And then another point about the truth or truthfulness that I want to share is a point that my husband, Gopal Prabhu, he shared with me when I was kind of going over this class with him. He said, you know, Krishna is the absolute truth. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is truth embodied. So how do we hope to have a relationship with him if we're not truthful? I know, that was my sound. I was like, okay. Thanks, Prabhu. I was like, okay, let me write that down. Gotta definitely include that in the class. So yeah, so that's truthfulness, our first regulative principle. Now our second regulative principle is austerity or self-discipline. And that's supported by promising not to engage in intoxication. And Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, verses 1 through 3, he says, without tapasya or austerity, no human being can get liberation. And then in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 17, verse 14, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada takes the time to explain to us, because he's so merciful. He's like, these are the austerities of the body, just so that we're clear on them. And he says, one should offer or learn to offer respect to God or to the demigods, the perfect qualified brahmanas, and the spiritual master and superiors like father, mother, or any person who is conversant with Vedic knowledge. One should practice cleansing oneself externally and internally, and he should learn to become simple in behavior. He should not do anything which is not sanctioned by the scriptural injunctions. And then he says there are penances and austerities as far as the body is concerned. So this is one example he gives. And then in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 17, verses 15 and 16, there Krishna himself explains the austerities of speech and mind. And he says, austerity of speech consists in speaking words that are truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and not agitating to others, and also in regularly reciting Vedic literature. And satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control, and purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind. So again, those subtle ways that we can think of these kind of regulative principles and this quality of austerity. So avoiding intoxication, which leads to, as we many of us know, death, abuse, crimes, and so many more instances of a loss of control, and not only being lost, but just entangled in the modes of ignorance and passion. So avoiding intoxication really helps us become more self-disciplined. And it's truly an austerity in this age of Kali, especially, again, not to like carp on the United States, but this is where we're living, so I'm giving it as an example. But I read a poll that said in the United States, almost 54% of people admitting to drinking alcohol or taking some kind of intoxicant, right? So this is considered the norm in our society, to be intoxicated. So it's very much an austerity to go against the grain of this, to go against everybody else, and to do this all for having a peace of mind so that we can connect to the Lord, so we can serve him in loving devotional service. And it helps us be more in that mode of goodness whenever possible, which, again, is still material, but it'll help us much more easily go into Krishna consciousness as opposed to being in the mode of ignorance or passion, right? And I always like to share quotes from my spiritual elders, like the people that inspire me. And one quote I want to share is from Vishakha Devadasi Prabhu, who's currently the temple president at Bhaktivedanta Manor. And she has a beautiful book called Harmony and the Bhagavad Gita, which I highly recommend if you haven't read it already. And she shares about austerity this way. Done gently, austerity yields the succulent fruits of gladness, of warmth, of lightness, of excitement. It slowly unfolds a life in which I'm not an isolated individual, but part of a great tradition that's moving towards transcendence. Life with austerity is a communion with sages of yore, where I quietly harvest a certain deep happiness that never leaves me despite my fate. Austerity's melodies rouse me to frolic with the mystery of the spirit. I just feel like she's so poetic in how she explains things. So a point of clarification, though, when speaking of addiction, whether it's intoxicants like alcohol, cigarettes, drugs, etc., I just want to clarify that many people know that it's not self-discipline alone nowadays that can help people recover from these addictions. We're clear that there are physical dependencies and everybody's different, you know, again, radical personalism. So we want to keep in mind when we're speaking of this to others that addiction is something we ask our guru, devotees who care for us, professionals, but we can also take advantage of support groups like bhakti recovery groups. And we actually have one in Alachua. And I just wanted to plug for them because it's a beautiful devotional service that they're doing. It's a 12-step program that's bhakti-oriented where they come together, steeped in bhakti, to kind of help each other free themselves from addictions, anarthas, and associated behaviors. So they are really working as we can as well, because we're here in the material world, so I'm sure, you know, all of us in some way or another have some kind of subtle material addictions. Work together to kind of turn away from those and to turn towards Krishna more, right? Now, our third regulative principle, which is cleanliness or purity, that's supported by promising not to engage in illicit sex. And Srila Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavad Gita, yeah, chapters 13, verses 8 through 12, he says, cleanliness is essential for making advancement in spiritual life. There are two kinds of cleanliness, external and internal. External cleanliness means taking a bath, but for internal cleanliness, one has to think of Krishna always and chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This process cleans the accumulated dust of past karma from the mind. I love how all of you just woke up with the holy names. That's wonderful. That's sweet. So in this example, Srila Prabhupada talks of external cleanliness as taking a bath, but we can also understand it as external in terms of like not engaging in illicit sex and how that kind of supports that external and internal cleanliness. And I actually wanted to share one quote from the Bible about this. It's from Matthew 5:8, where it says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." And I share this because it's true in bhakti as well, right? The cleanliness of our bodies and our hearts helps us see God, helps us see Krishna, who's living in our heart, just waiting for us to turn to him. You know, Rukmini Prabhu is always saying, he's like he's unemployed there. He's just waiting. He's like, please turn to me. Like, I love you so much, right? And then Srila Prabhupada explains in chapter 8 of Science of Self-Realization, he says, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended Chetto Darpana Marjanam, right? Marjanam means cleansing, Darpanam means mirror, and the heart is a mirror. It's like a camera. So a camera just takes all kinds of pictures, days and nights. So our heart also takes pictures and keeps them in an unconscious state. So therefore, Chaito Darpana Marjanam, one has to cleanse his heart, right? So that cleanliness of the purity of the mind and the body, they help us stay focused and connect to that true spiritual nature. And then finally, we get to our fourth regulative principle, which is mercy or compassion. And that's supported by promising not to engage in meat eating. And Prabhupada really explains this in terms of kind of saying that Daya, in one of his word for words, which I thought was really interesting, and I got this from the Bhaktivedanta Manor, by the way, has a really extensive manual to train like its bhaktas and devotees, which I highly recommend you check out. It's really, really good. So in that manual, they point out that in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 16, verses 26 to 30, that Srila Prabhupada gives the definition of daya, or mercy, as intolerance of others' unhappiness. So when we're trying to build mercy or compassion, we're trying to engage in behavior that doesn't create unhappiness and suffering for other living beings, whether they're in human bodies or in animal bodies. So, and we know, like we've heard Srila Prabhupada speak on this, how slaughterhouses and in our modern times, factory farms really treat souls and animal bodies as commodities for the sake of their flesh and their milk. And, you know, it just engaging in that doesn't help us grow mercy and compassion in our hearts. It actually hardens our hearts. And I just wanted to share a quote from Bir Krishna Goswami Maharaj. He wrote a beautiful book called Realizing Our Empathic Nature Connected to Krishna. It's a really, really amazing book. And I just wanted to share it because sometimes we may feel like it's not practical for us to try to grow our compassion, but he's doing it, so there's hope. He says, I have come to the realization that merely praying for compassion is not enough. One must consciously practice it. So whenever I perceive someone opposing me or showing negativity towards me or my actions, I make that person a special object of my compassion. I pray intensely for him or her, and that helps me develop the Vaishnava quality of not having enemies, but being everyone's well-wisher. And then he goes on to explain that thanks to the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and Radha Govinda, he starts feeling like a softening of his heart. And he starts feeling so much love for all of Krishna's parts and parcels, even those who are antagonistic to him, that he just is overwhelmed by happiness. And he's even more motivated to try to share love for them and to kind of bring them to Krishna consciousness. So I just thought that was so amazing, like so practical, and it is possible. So wrapping up, kind of like what I'm talking about, I'm going to share three quotes, one from Anuttama Prabhu, and then another one from Rukmini Devi Dasi or Rukmini Walker Prabhu, and then Srila Prabhupada, as well as a short story, if there's time. So Anuttama Prabhu, a lot of this inspiration for this class I got from remembering when I did the Disciples Course, and Anuttama Prabhu, in the Disciples Course, he connects the regulative principles to these qualities. And he says that by avoiding these activities, so the things that we promise not to do, and by chanting 16 rounds of japa, it helps us become more peaceful, it helps us become more quiet, and then we can be more sincere, and without complications or distractions, we can practice our Krishna conscious life, right? So in that peaceful state of mind, we can live more in the mode of goodness, and we can avoid passionate and ignorant activities, bless you, Prabhu. And that will help us progress steadily in our spiritual lives. And then again, when I was speaking to Rukmini Prabhu about this class, she gave me a really beautiful imagery when I was trying to kind of understand this for myself. She said, following the regulative principles is getting rid of the junk so that we have a nice, fertile soil for the seeds of bhakti. right? So if your garden is full of concrete and garbage, you're not going to grow anything. And it's the same thing for our hearts and for our consciousness. And then finally, Srila Prabhupada says, austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness are the basic principles of religion, and they prepare the ground for the reception of advancement in spiritual knowledge. So here we go. We have it from many, many people who say, like, these regulative principles, they're really helping us establish and welcome the Lord into our hearts so that our heart is a space where bhakti can grow. Our consciousness is a space where bhakti can grow. And that's not a consciousness that's steeped in anger or lust or in greed. It's one that's full of truthfulness, honesty, austerity, self-discipline, cleanliness, purity, mercy, and compassion, and of course, the chanting of the holy names. And I know we're almost done, but I just really want to share this very sweet story from a Vaishnavi from A Bond of Love, Gangamayi Devi Dasi, that I feel just perfectly illustrates what I've been trying to share with you. And it's a very brief. It talks about when she was in Vrindavan and she was cleaning Srila Prabhupada's room, the floor with a rag. And Prabhupada actually came in and said to her, I will show you how to clean. And then he got down on his knees and calves, suspended above the floor, and started dipping the rag into the bucket and wiping it over the floor. And then he put the rag in again, and then he screwed it tightly, got all the water out of the rag, and then he looks her straight in the eyes, and he says, you do like that. And she was like, I mean, I get shivers when I think of it. And she goes, yes, Srila Prabhupada, yes. And then the next day he checked in on her and he said, did you do like that? And she said, yes, Srila Prabhupada. And she shares that she realized that he was also not just teaching her about cleaning the floor. He was showing her that breaking the four regulative principles wasn't good for her. And that she didn't want to do those things. And that she wanted to be sober and be as Krishna had made her. And she shares, and this is her direct words now, all our training is to remember Krishna at the time of death. I don't want to come back again. I don't want to disappoint Prabhupada. And I owe Prabhupada something for what he's put into me. And at least, the least I can do is try to be conscious and follow the principles. Okay? So we can also do this. And gratitude to Srila Prabhupada, who at least many of us, especially those of us in Western bodies, would not know anything of Krishna if it weren't for him. So just to recap quickly, lust, anger, and greed, qualities that turn us away from Krishna, they're daimonic / materialistic, they entangle us more, they make us forget our true relationship to Krishna, and they never fill up the God-sized hole in our hearts. However, truthfulness, austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and the chanting of the holy names are qualities that turn us towards Krishna and really prepare our hearts and our consciousness for our eternal loving relationship with him, where we can serve him as his devotees. So thank you so much. Vancha kalpa tarubhyas cha, kripa sindubhya eva cha, patitanam pavanevyo, vaishnavevyo namo namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances to all the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. They can fulfill the desires of everyone just like desire trees, and they're full of compassion for the fallen conditioned souls. So I apologize for going over time 3 minutes. Please, what are your takeaways, your questions, your comments, or corrections? I'd love to hear them. Thank you. Ah, my ever well wisher, Sukhada Prabhu.
Thank you. It's such a wonderful reminder, you know, of our real business. I remember when I was teaching at the Gurukul, we once did a play, and the girls represented, like somebody represented lust, anger, and greed. And then what happened is they were in an airport, and someone started giving prasadam, and little by little, their bad qualities started to go away, and they were almost like alarmed, you know? But, because, you know, it's so touted as something good.
Mm-hmm.
Like every movie, you know, songs, it's just glorified if someone's lusty or their anger. And greed also, the rewards are shown for, you know, they have a lot of money, and it doesn't matter how you get it, you know, you just got to get it. And so thank you for that very important reminder.
Thank you, Sukhada Prabhu. Yeah, it's a reminder from Srila Prabhupada himself. He's the one that established all this, kind of to remind us all the time.
because of the atheistic philosophy, somewhat survival of the fittest, then you do whatever it takes to get ahead. You know, that kind of philosophy is being spreading now, and especially online and so forth. Yes, that idea is there, so we have to be careful of that. Madam, I know you're a quote and give a few quotes from the Bible. There's another one in Jeremiah, some part, I don't remember, it states, the human heart is very unclean. The human heart is very unclean. So that's a good forum to preach. You quote that and then you say, Chaito Darpana. That's Lord Chaitanya recommend how to clean.
Yes.
By the chanting.
I love that. Thank you. Yeah, I think it's always great to get inspiration of how we can talk, especially interfaith, and have conversations with people who are from different faiths. So thank you, Prabhu.
You have Bhagavad Gita in front of you. You have Bhagavad Gita in front of you. 3.39.
I'd have to put my glasses back on, Prabhu. Okay,
that's fine. 3.39, it says, Abhritam genam etena genina nitta bairina. This last greed, anger, as you are mentioning, three gateway to hell, this lust can never be controlled, can never be satisfied, Krishna says. And then he says, Abhritam genam etena genina nitta bairina kama rupena kuntaya dushparena nalena cha. It will burn like fire. Sex is not extinguishing the lust. It's just a, for a temporary, maybe few hours, few days or something, and then it will come back. It will never be satisfied. So where it will be satisfied? 10.51.43, Bhagavatam, Krishna himself spoke to Muchukunda that the moment the soul had an apathy to devotional service, impersonalism is born, and loneliness takes birth from that moment. Because the soul feels lonely without Krishna's service, this lust can never be destroyed unless they reconnect through service. It is important that we serve by chanting, by practical service. Everybody should. And we also have to guard, because I mentioned this yesterday or day before yesterday, where this material desire, you know, there is an initiating cause, then there is a sanctioning cause, then there is an instrumental cause, efficient cause, ingredient cause, all these five causes are there. 18.16, Krishna says, without looking at those five causes, one is not intelligent if they don't look at it. So initiating cause means we have only one thing, is a desire. That's all. Everything else it has to be sanctioned by Krishna, and then Maya will manifest or arrange it. So this desire to exploit or enjoy separately from Krishna will never go away unless we serve the devotees and Krishna.
Jai.
It will never go away. And criticizing or putting down or really saying bad things to others, it will increase the material desire. We should pound this in our heart.
Jai, thank you. Ugh, I love the passion that you have for that. Thank you so much for your share. Oh, all the way over there.
I have this question. I don't know exactly how to put it on. When you quote Vir Krishna Maharaj about compassion, that he said if he feels something, you know, somebody like a
antagonistic towards you, yeah.
Yeah. And then he starts feeling compassion. So I think this is something that we can question, because, you know, actually I can be hearing or somebody's feeling or something, and I in my mind feel, oh, I have to feel compassion because he's against me. You know, and then it's all about me. You know, you just to start feel compassion from somebody who is against you, that's weird. You know, because maybe you are hurting that people, or maybe you are being somehow affecting that the person or the community or something like that. So I don't agree with that.
Okay. Thank you for sharing. So what I heard you say is that your concern about what I shared from Veer Krishna Goswami Maharaj is that if somebody's antagonistic towards you, that you feel like it's important to assess whether they're antagonistic because you may actually be hurting them or insulting them in any way. And with that in mind, so do some self-assessment. And then after you've done that self-assessment, then you can then pray for them so that you can grow in compassion for them. And hopefully that will help you realize if you have created an offense to this Vaishnava. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that that's a valid point. And in that quote, he doesn't go into it, but he does go into it in the book in other places. So I have very little time in the classes, so I couldn't share the whole chapter. But he does talk about having self-assessment in terms of what we're doing or what we're saying and how that affects others. And are we creating like Vaishnava Aparad with our, you know, being offensive to others with our words and our behavior? So I think that's a very valid point, and that we have to look to ourselves first and see what we're doing. And then at the same time, pray for that person so that, because the point that he's making is that he doesn't want that resentment from when the person's being, you know, antagonistic to us, and maybe we don't understand, we don't know why. It may be valid, we may have done something. But sometimes when we don't know why, we let that resentment and that anger grow in our hearts, and it harden our hearts. So what he's saying is that if we can at least start with the prayer of praying for that person and seeing them as a part and parcel of Krishna, then that can then soften our hearts, can grow our love, and perhaps that can help us in our realization as to like what we may have done. Does that help?
Yeah, that's why, you know, when okay. you have that feeling, you pray to Krishna and take that from your heart.
Mm.
Because you are the problem, not the other person.
So, No, thank you. So just because since you didn't have the microphone, I'll just say it again so the people online can hear. So what you said is just that's why it's important that when you have that feeling to pray to Krishna to take that feeling away from your heart to help you. Because so that and I think that's valid, because again, we can't change other people, but we can only change ourselves, right? Hare Krishna. There we go. I got you, girl. Don't worry. I got you. Okay, does anybody else have any questions or feedback, comments? Oh, yes, Prabhu. Sorry, 3 minutes.
Prabhu, my blessings to you. Thank you very much for the class. I really appreciated the point of tying the qualities with the regulative principles.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it helped me think deeper about the vows that we make, because at least in my personal experience, it just made me think and reflect about how I can feel like I'm practicing these regulative principles. But then when we talk about the qualities that are connected with them, then I can think deeper and feel that, yeah, I'm not eating meat, but the whole quality is about compassion. And then when we speak about the quality of compassion and what it actually looks like, then I feel that I'm actually not maybe practicing, I'm not following the vow that I made. If we go into like a deeper aspect of it.
But it's not for beating yourself up. It's right, for deepening and making you excited about the fact that you have even more to do now in growing in Krishna's service, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So okay. That was actually going to be like the follow-up.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I wanted to make sure you didn't beat yourself up over it.
And that's what the question would be, is that, yeah, we can, like, as we're practicing, we go, the philosophy, the practice, the serve, everything that we're doing is taking us deeper within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of, and we're unlayering stuff that we didn't see. And so finding the balance between where we're not beating ourselves up, but we're also not becoming complacent. And
yes.
We're kind of doing the same thing over and over, and nothing's really changing in our heart. So how to find the balance where we're actively trying to go deeper, but we're also not like putting ourselves down and discouraging ourselves from practicing.
Yeah. So. My advice, and I know I've spoken about it before, is Mahatma Prabhu, Mahatma Das Prabhu, who's a part of our community, and he's the guru of a lot of people here, he has a self-care affirmations book that are affirmations that are steeped in Krishna consciousness. And I feel like looking at the language and how he phrases things is really helpful, so that you can balance it so that you are being, like, you're self-assessing and you're being critical, but in a compassionate way to yourself. Because again, we can't be compassionate to others if we're being awful to ourselves. Like, it's just not gonna work. It's just not gonna work. Like, for some people, just the psych, we don't have that advanced enough to, like, we're not Bhaktivinoda Thakur where we can, like, make these beautiful songs where he's just, like, talking about himself as, like, a dog and, like, all these things, and then go from that mindset to then, like, being loving and compassionate. Like, it's just, we don't have that ability. So it's really important, and thank you, Sukada Prabhu, as always, for your love and the support. And it's really important for us to practice that self-talk so that we can then do that for others. And I just as a caveat, and it's also very important with children, right? Because they are watching how we are talking to ourselves and to others, especially in connection to Krishna consciousness. So if we're using negative self-talk, that will give them a bad association with the Lord and with his service. So we have to be very careful about that. And I just say that just because everybody knows that kids is just like my special service. I love children. And I have my Krishna kids, and I was working at school and everything. So it's just something to keep in mind. So we also have an inner child in our heart. So just kind of keep that in mind, how you're talking to that inner child in your heart. And then that'll help you with the balance. Is that helpful at all? Okay. Okay, great. So I think we're over time, but thank you so much. Gantar Taraj, Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.